Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about...
Update on putting the software pieces together for the Internet of Things. Firstly, the Internet of Things. This is when your toaster, your fridge, your whatever is connected via Wi-Fi to the cloud, and then from the cloud to your home devices again. So you may question why you'd want to do it. I'll probably explain it. And the sort of thing that I'm doing for is to massively connect a whole bunch of sensors that you put into the school classroom, give to a kid, and whatever he does with it is automatically recorded in his homework book or stuff like that. In particular, he might set up a device, an experiment, six or more parallel experiments, all with sensors on it, all recorded at the same time, and all running for several hours or even days. Allows you to do that if you've got these smart intelligent sensors. So that's the motivation for it. Now, why you'd possibly do it, why not, there's a series of questions. Why not actually do it with a thermometer and your hand print? Why not record it in your lab? Obviously, the speed and access of that's going to run out. But even so, there's sort of the next computerization of that is the computer substitution of the actual person holding that in the notebook. You can actually have it there without the internet. You say, why do that? Well, the actual cost of that unit actually is in excess of the cost of the other unit. That's because the internet has got a whole lot of other uses for it, so that's been paid for. And the computers that are in the back of the internet are very powerful and very quick. And you've got storage. So you are basically renting the storage and the information, the accessibility of the internet to go forward. So traditionally, you would have had your monitor and it gets connected to an analog to digital converter, which gets written to the bus of your computer and it gets stored on your hard drive. That's the most simple version of it. But that's going to be a little bit more expensive than the other alternatives. And let me walk you through it. You can buy a chip and a board for $10, $3. And it connects your device to the internet. So that's only a few dollars to set up. And then that means that's only a few dollars per station, because you can use the same computer on the internet to store it. So you instantly get a write down. And because this is low power, you can battery power. There's a whole series of things that you can do, and it's small footprint. So there's a whole lot of things. You can get an inexpensive chip and actually place it anywhere. If it's Wi-Fi connected, you can connect it through. Then you've got the internet. And there's very good at manipulating it to a certain point, and then it has to be ported to your desktop, which is very good at, say, sampling, seeing what's on the internet and manipulating the data. So that's the theory behind the Internet of Things. And I don't know if you can listen to a properly structured tutorial on how to do it. But perhaps it's worthwhile to actually listen to the structure of what I'm doing and how I'm slowly solving problems and the different types of computers at different points, having different types of computer languages, and then just sucking it and pushing it through. So the three computers, the sensor computer, the internet computer, and your desktop. So that's 1, 2, 3, and they've all got different programming languages and different capacities. So the sensor computer you have on your sensor is really only worth a couple of cents, and it's programmable in a very basic level. It doesn't have an operating system. It has a code, and when it's switched on, it just automatically runs. It hasn't got a keyboard or anything like that. You can buy some some fairly cheap credit size computers which do that, but for mass production you have, they're called programmable logic, PLC, programmable logic controllers. Now, for a while, say about 20 years ago, I couldn't really see the value of them because they cost so much to implement that, and the computers which could substitute them were so cheap. And this is not, you don't go into a computer shop and compare it. The flood of second-hand computers just, you know, people get operating systems a bit slow. I now have a computer which I'm prepared to give away for you to lessen the cost of your PLC. And that was when it was around, PLCs were around $20 and computers were around $20. Now what's happened is that the PLCs have dropped incredibly, and the computer's expense has been in the power supply, and things have changed. So you now have to get your PLC. And your PLC gets programmed in basically sort of a machine language C++. Well, it's sort of a C++ on your computer, but then it gets converted into machine language and put on your little chip, and it tells your little chip to do things. Now, where the sort of major breakthrough for me is the integration of chips and components. I'll get back onto to how you program that in a second. In the old days, or you know, 10 years ago, you'd buy individual components and you'd wire those individual components together and build up a board. But now what happens is, and so you'd get a PCB, poly something or other board, and you'd solder onto that. But now you buy the assembled boards with everything on it, and they have a row of connectors on the outside, and you point-to-point connect board to board. Ideally, it'd be nice to have a little PC, but you've got that point-to-point connection. So it's really the miniaturization's come in and driven past, and now we're leaving us to go back with the old technology of like the old transistors of old, or thyristors. You'd have to connect each cable to each cable and put it across, and you'd get some electronics that would be just a real nest of wires, you know, threading through to get everything done. Now that disappeared, and now it's reappearing, this point-to-point moving, and there's a biological equivalent to all of this. This is so in your brain has nerve fibers going down. It's not a bus. Oh, I suppose the nerves are a bit of a bus. So a bus is, the idea is that it's a bus is a line and you listen to it like a telephone line. You can get all your components on a telephone line. You can still do that. It's just that when you're building an Internet of Things thing, you tend to place your components around the object such that they have the best robust use of it. So thermocouple controls are up where so the thermocouples go in to their little, it's called breakout boards, so it's where it's converted to the stuff. Are you okay there, Rippy? Okay, so you're going through there. Now, what happens is that you have to actually program your computer. Now, about 20 years ago, you had to get before USBs. I sort of left this area just prior to USBs. You had to get a serial input into it. A serial input, you'd write on it, and back in the day, you could write on it once, and then to raise it, you had to get an ultraviolet light. It had a little window, and you had to, you know, just really crazy stuff. So it didn't have the adaptability or the reprogrammability. So nowadays, you hook it up through a USB to your computer, you open up an application, and you select the board, you select the drivers that you want to do it, and you select your libraries, you compose code, and it goes on to it. Now, the major difference, which is supposed in the last couple of years, is that these boards have a couple of satellite boards have come on board. It's hard to say. So you can buy a breakout board for an ESP8266, which is your generic Wi-Fi section. You can have it separate, but now they have, it's just another little feature of your main board. And again, with memory boards and things like that, you can start to port it on. And so you have these boards, which are sort of custom boards, but they've got a range of things on their board besides the USB port to program it. They've got a whole lot of other things. And the board which I'm going with, which I'll have to have a real look, it's called the Arduino Mega customized Wi-Fi version. I don't know, it's $10. It's mega. So you think, oh, mega, oh, I don't want it. It's bigger. It's tiny, sort of the height of a coffee cup. Sort of one of your high bigger mugs. So your Arduino Uno is the size of a teacup, not physically, but you know, in terms of cross section. Whereas the next one is 20% bigger, which is the Arduino Mega. The Arduino Mega is a step away. So we're talking about the boards that you place in your device to make it the Internet of Things. And there's a series of boards, the Arduino boards, which are basically, well, they are 8-bit. I can sort of imagine 8-bit programming. But they're now, as the chips are sped up, they're now run at 140 megahertz. You know, these are really powerful oscillators. They're doing 8 bits. They're not like Intel cores, which can multi-thread. They're there for one task, really high speed. I don't know if there's going to be an advantage going to higher bits to make them 16 bits or 30 bits too. We just to give you an idea, this is 8-bit single core 140 megahertz, oodles of power, and then we've now got 8-core 8-core gigahertz, 2 or 3 gigahertz. You know, you've got orders of magnitude higher, but it's doing graphics. This is just doing reading one thing and putting it out to the internet. So it's more than fast enough for what it is. So it's relatively cheap. So there's a board there, and I'm just at the stage. So there's three boards I've looked at. One is the Hazar, which is really small, and it's got feed in for a LiPo battery. So it's the idea is it's going to be really small, and you put the LiPo battery on it, so it can be really small and put away. The Arduino board is cheap and generic, for systems for, you know, I would generally have it for systems which are going to have a high current need. So this, when it's driving electromagnets or doing things like that, you're not going to battery drive it. So I knew that already, so I've done it with the Uno board. Now I've gone up to the Mega Arduino Mega board, and the Arduino Mega board's got, whereas the Hazar's got 1 and 7 analog and 7 or probably 11 digital outputs. This is which you can swap. The Arduino's got sort of 12 analog. This is the Mega 12 analog. 12 servo drivers. This is it's not a stepper. It's a servo. I'll talk about servos and things like that. And 60 odd digital outputs. So you can just sit back, relax, and once you're pushed to the Amiga, you can then relax with it. The only problem here is trying to actually figure out how all these three components work together. They've got 32 meg onboard memory and a Wi-Fi component. Look how it all operates. It's going to be a nightmare to set it up. Or I think it's going to be a nightmare to set up this one, but I'll go across. But essentially, you program your little washing machine chip, and it goes around and does something, does the basic thing of read your various sensors, and I'm going to have it reading about 10 sensors, 2 pressures, 5, 6 temperatures, 3 weights, a pH meter just there, so that's half a dozen things, and then it constructs it into a string, puts it into a string. So a string is, you've got heaps of different data types. There's human readable English is a string, like the a newspaper is a string. Then there's numbers, human readable numbers, which go across, and then there's binary, which is the most compressed version. And you do is, I don't put it into binary at this stage because it's a little bit of information sent up to the internet at its own leisure. It's you might want to do it same there. I just get it to print to the internet a string. So how it does, it prints to a string, is that it has a method of sending a request to a server to a URL, and the internet computer at the other side. So let's try and put it there. Physically somewhere in America or Sydney, there's a computer, and it's sitting there, and it will respond to a request. And what you do is you send out into the internet a URL, a www.com, blah, blah, blah. I don't know what it's got. No, it says www.com. And then what you do is then add on to that a question mark. Oh, well, it says a question mark, what you want. And then you say, A equals this, B equals that, and you can just go through. And so that means that it will, if that website is a program website, it will say, right, do I display it? No, I actually calculate these things and use these values. And essentially, you can be really cute and send out a whole heap of different information. I send out a string. It's a string of where I want the information to go and what the information is, just in one stream with tokens in it. So a token is for us it would be a space, but I use an exclamation mark and underscore, and I just get it to go through and produce that in a PHP file. So it sends it to a PHP file. Now what actually happens is that it goes up with this URL, Universal Resource Locator, And computers then, when they see the URL, and they're very, very fast computers, and they see the URL, they know that certain URLs go to certain points, certain nodes. They don't know where the URL is, but they know that www, all that is North America. All that goes to England. All this goes to Central Australia, or this goes to China. It goes up there, and then this goes down the optical fiber. Your data goes from your measurement into your PLC, onto your in your program, into a string which is put on the end of a URL. This is the most, by far the most robust way of doing it. So it goes out, and it, this URL is read, and everything is programmed around the world to read these URLs to locate your information, and it will send it across. And if it's, depending if it's a long or short bit of information, it will automatically break it up into little bits and pieces and send it under many different paths and eventually work out how to get them. So it eventually will arrive at, say, a United States computer. And the United States computer, it's a web page, not a .html, but a PHP. Okay there, Ruby? A PHP. Do you want to? Oh, do you want to go for a ride? Yeah, I'll be going soon. Okay, so it's a called PHP. So HTML means it's a highlighted text markup language. So it knows if you put the file .html, it knows that when Chrome or a browser opens an HTML file, it knows what to do. It will actually go and read that file and use the markup to actually graphically and construct your web page. Now, PHP, which I don't know what PHP stands for, .php, is something where rather than the actual server runner. Oh, it looks like everyone's going there. So rather than the server computer on the server will actually start to operate. So rather, are you okay there, honey?
Alright, you go out. Make sure you get some lunch.
Okay, I'll do that.
See you later.
Yeah, I'll do that right away. So, while you need an application to write the software to put on to your chip, you need a series of programs to write software which posts it on the drive of the server, and each file on the drive of the server can be addressed by URL. And so you need probably the most basic, you probably need a step up, so you have to buy some space on a server, and this is the whole thing. If you were just buying it for that chip, it would be hideously expensive, but if you bought it already to host web pages for everything else, it's free additional. And this is the entire economy of Internet of Things. Okay, starting up again. So you've got software computers operating at three points to get to you. That's on the device, in the internet, and home. And you actually need three different programming languages and three different applications to operate. But it's hard to say. The fundamental thing is on your device. It's a very simple thing. It's just read and publish. On the internet, it's receive and convert into a very small file. So the very first two steps, and the last step is a little bit more complicated. But we're talking about how to, so for the publishing, for writing up for the little chip in your thing, for your Internet of Things, you need Arduino software, and the code, and it's called sketches. For some reason, a bunch of code is a sketch, and you download the sketch to it. Ruby, how's my helmet? Do you need to pump anything up? Do you know how to pump it up, darling? I think it's the pump's around the back of the house, I think. Oh no, it's just up here, over here. Okay, so just keep on going on that. I might have to stop and help my son. Do you know how to actually click it in? So the actual lever's lifted up for when it's open. So you put it on with, and then click it so it's vertical. You need Arduino software, so it pulls up and then it has to identify the serial port it works through, and the board and the rate and all that type of stuff it goes through, and then you can pump it on, and you I'll give another basic thing which you do. There's a basic strategy you do. Okay, I'm off to do it. So to program onto the internet, there's a bit of a break there. So to program onto the internet, you have to have something called a file. You can do something. You have to buy and rent some internet space. Okay, and of course, once you do that, it's up to you to actually exploit it and use it as much as possible. You know, the same price, you can just start piling up computer programs in very few people use it to the full extent. In fact, I know no one uses it half as much as they should. They have to employ it. It's called a server. So your computer is the device computer, your thing computer, your server computer. And to program to the server, you have to rent it. And once you rent it, you have a URL which you can rent, which you have access, and a password. And once you get that, you get software, and you can actually put files. So it's just like a drive of your computer. So you've got a C drive, a D drive. You now have an internet drive, and you can just put files onto that. And you each file you put on, you can access as you would access files on your computer, or you can access it from any computer in the world by typing that file name in. That is the name of your website and the directory of that rips thing. So you have to create these files called PHP files, and if I hadn't programmed in BASIC on a TRS-80 or punch cards or stuff like that, it would do my head in. But I'm sort of used to the ad hoc way that things come along. So if you've got a logical brain, this will fry it for you, because it is completely illogical and ad hoc the way things come along. So you have a PHP file and you can edit it. But if I can just thoroughly recommend getting a FTP program. So the FTP program will allow you to open up directories and move files between your computer, drag and drop files between your computer and your computer files and the FTP file. So the FTP will open up a window and it will have the file structure there, and you can drop your files in. Now, you can then there's certain things, so you can write your basic file on your computer and then drag and drop it across, and it'll suddenly appear on the internet underneath that thing. And then the great thing is that you can actually click on that and say edit it, and an editor will come up and you can put things in. And it's a little bit slow, because what happens is that if you invariably, if you're like me, you're a bit brain dead, you tend to reverse letters and leave out colons and God knows, and things that don't work, and it's a little bit slow because you then you run that program by actually just calling every time the computer gets server gets wake up and said, yeah, wake up, this program, this file. Now if it's a HTML file and stuff like that, it will send it all across the internet. If it's a PHP file, it will just do what that PHP file is. So HTML file, it's all automatically told to put across the internet. PHP or PHP code, you can have PHP code embedded in your web page if you wanted to, so your web page can do things. So in your capture and online email and forms, they have PHP files to write things. The PHP files can do certain things. They can read the junk on the end of a URL. So if you put your URL and you know in your Google Maps, yeah, where you've got all the location, that is the maps is the software, but the all the location information is read across all the and stuff like that. So you can read across, and then you can do it. Now, if you look at Google and stuff like that, it says equal this equals that equals that equals that. I deliberately have avoided that and actually just send a single string, and I make it a very big, long, complicated string which can be then broken apart. It's got natural dividers in that string, and it's important because the PHP files can't take a space. So the one thing is they can't take a space, a space. So you send your information across, and it goes into your PHP file, which gets executed every time it's called. And every time it's called, it takes the data up, explodes it, and then packs it. If you can believe it, it explodes it. So it explodes that string into an array, and then it packs, then converts the array of human readable stuff. It's a simple pack command. It's called pack. Now, for some reason, it's unexplained to me, you have to put an ellipsis, and this is dot dot dot, in there to pack it into. There's no logic to it. I think there is just, quite frankly, no logic. So it's put it into a binary array, and then once it's a binary array, it can then, if you can either W or A, write, clean, or append. And so it just keeps on adding to your data array. So you can have, I've broken it up just so I can sanely handle all the data and I don't lose the data. By hour, I create a file. The file with the file containing what hour it is, what day and hour it is, and then I append the strings which are coming out of your thing. Your thing speaks to the internet, and this stream of consciousness puts things up. This compiles it into a binary file, and a binary file is about the tenth the size of a string file. It's nice and small. And then those files are just growing all the time. So you can actually not have your computer there, and as long as the internet is not broken, the internet is on, and your thing is powered, now it will just slowly put out more and more stuff. It will just sort of veneer, putting a veneer of information on all the time. To get it up, so you get these files, and you're welcome. I think it's Glenbrook institute.org/test/hillp for the older files, the string, the text files, and for the binary files, it's hill 2. You'll be able to see it there. And if you just go Glenbrook institute.org backslash test, it will take you up to what looks like a computer directory, and you can navigate across and look at the data live. Then you have the system of how do you access, get a copy of what's on the internet back onto your computer. So the fundamental idea is that I've got this region of, I now have a landscape of what's happened on the internet. I need an image on my computer. And you use a something called command line package. It's like a computer program with no interface except computer code. It's unlike Word. Word, you can actually put stuff in. Are you okay there? Do you want some lunch?
Okay.
I'll get some lunch soon. So after when I come back, I'll be able to go for a ride. Okay. So So I'll just try and finish this off. So you use this package called WeGet. So you go to the internet, you download WeGet, and when you type commands into the WeGet, so you get a command line editor, you open up a command line program. When you type commands into WeGet, it will do things like copy a file. And the important thing is it will copy, you give it a URL and this destination file, it will copy the URL to that destination file. Recursively. Now, the critical thing which we've come across here is you can start to tell it to do various things. Do it this way or do it that way. And by putting a minus sign C, this file, to my computer, it will actually only, it will look at your computer, look at that file, see if the computer, the file has got some extra bits on it. It's growing as it does, and then just simply copy, append it to the next bit. So I can have this entire folio of information, and I can have a copy of the folio here. And this WeGet command will, instead of pointing megabits back and forth, it will just look at the last couple of bits of information that you've put across. And so you can get a fairly faithful, low-cost image. So it's all beginning to set for you. So, and then you have to do, and I won't do it in this episode, you have to do some acrobatics with the internet data and convert it to data that computers can, or LabVIEW, the advanced programming language which can manipulate computer-based data around, and the way that that operates. So there's a sort of a it's just basically taking the first four bits and putting them in front of the last four bits. You sort of cut your eight bits, you cut it in half and move the front half, just physically pick up the front half and move it forward. And then you also have to tell the computer that information that you're giving it is for a signed integer, that is, it can be for negative numbers, and do that, and it all comes up rather well. So it's a big process at this point in time, and it's the knowledge, just being able to physically open up the different. So I'm trying to think. There's probably four languages which I'm looking at just to do this, and you know, who knows, one day it will come ahead. But the I suppose the important thing to understand is that. There's only so much. It's a washing machine chip. There's only so much programming that you can usefully do on it. It's the internet. There's only so much useful thing you can do on the internet, and that is listen and accumulate data. So those two steps are really simple, it's the effort of actually getting the I just have to watch time. Yeah, it's the effort of actually getting this all together. Now, for me, it's been a very long, long process because there's sort of the dumb way of doing it, which is, you know, text on your thing, text in the server, or string test text at home, and just getting it very, very basic. And once it's up, very basic, although that sounds very simple, three parts, it doesn't work, but having it very simple, you can see which part doesn't work. And then gradually learning what to do. And it's not necessarily intelligence, it's just patience to work out what's going on and to want to do various things. And so I was just moving towards this, stream of consciousness data going into an assembled consciousness on the internet, this assemble mirror on the internet, and then an image. I was going to manhandle the image such it would check and monitor and do this process, which is already out there in WeGet. I've got no illusions that any of this is at all valuable. This is why I'm podcasting. I don't think it's employable. You know, if it's not something I would try and hide and not tell people about. I think, in fact, we require more people to just frankly talk about how this is done, more people to do it. And it's sort of like people many 30 years ago being very predictive that they were an expert in Word and Excel. I think there's still people saying, look, I'm a expert in Photoshop and stuff like that. It's sort of, yes, it's not generally available knowledge, but it's not and it's a bit involved and it's a bit expensive to get involved to do it, but it's really not something to put up there with something truly imaginative and truly revolutionary. It's just a sign of hard work. So just to sum up again, the Internet of Things has required programming of three levels of basic computers in three different ways, and basically you've got to go on them all very slowly and in parallel. And what essentially happens is that a piece of powerful software on your desktop computer can actually simplify everything else up. So it simplifies it by just harvesting the most recent information. So that means that you wouldn't think of storing information on your thing. The thing is continuously streaming things up, and then that is stored. Your internet is really basically a hard drive, and then you can image that hard. So it's essentially, although I say there are three computers, it's really a sensor, a hard drive, and a reader. Hard drive reader is essentially the three components, although there's computers and computer programming and all those sections there. So that's some. Thanks a lot for listening. I'll get off and get my kids lunch, having neglected them and not gone cycling around the house with them. Hope you've enjoyed it. I hope it's a worthwhile thing that I've told you about.
Another podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.